Hello and welcome back to the Legal Queen podcast. I release these episodes each Sunday morning at 6 a.m. We have 11,000 monthly listeners, so I hope that you enjoy as we try to help those that have a family law question or query by giving as much information as we possibly can. So if I could ask that if you enjoy this podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating so that we can help even more people. My goal is to reach a total of 50,000 monthly listeners by the end of the year, and you guys can help me do that. Anyway, let's get on with the episode. I hope you enjoy. So, without further ado, let's crack on. Ansi, you are a regular here in the Discord lounge. Whenever you're ready, ask me your question.
I had a 4 repetitive steps order, which was dismissed, but also on the, it was back in April. I kept emailing the, you know, the court email, but obviously they are, as you always say, behind and they deal with more urgent cases. But the court order is incorrect because also the lay justices said that my future address is to remain confidential. So is it something that should have gone into this steps order in like in the dismissal order that my address is to be confidential, or is it something that I still need to bring up, you know, during the child arrangement case?
The court will know that your address is confidential, so it doesn't have to go in every single order.
The court, oh, I see.
Yeah, the court know that. So that information is so that when the court are sending things out, they make sure your address isn't on anything. But it doesn't go into the order.
Okay, that's fine. And then they were ordered, the police were ordered to give disclosures. And obviously they received, like the court received it. But because I don't have a solicitor, I don't know, like, is the court, you know, forwarding it to me? Or is it, I'm going to see it in the bundle from the applicants? Or where am I going to get this, you know, disclosures from?
I don't know what you mean, Ansi. I don't know what's been ordered. If the applicant has been asked to file anything with the court, they've got to serve it on you as well. Okay. The
applicant... No, yeah, it's obviously it's domestic violence involved. So I reported him to police, and they had the report and all these things. I have that because I asked, you know, out just for my own information, you know, previously. But then now the court ordered, like, this, it's called Annex 5. So the police is to provide all these, you know, it's a kind of evidence for a non-molestation order.
So your question so to I don't me know. Is, your question to me is, if the police file it with the court, will they give it to you? Check your order,
yeah.
Because the order should be worded that the police will file and serve. File means file with the court, serve means serve on the parties. So check the wording of the order.
Okay, all right.
All right?
I'll read it.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ansi. Bye-bye. Jen, you're next up. How can I help?
Hi.
Hello.
I had my final orders made in back in February, but I've only just received the actual paperwork for it. It doesn't stay, it finishes at 16 hours a month supervised contact for my ex with my son.
Yeah.
Doesn't state anything about progression past that. Is that all he'll ever get unless he takes him back to court? Or is it the rest at my discretion?
God, I've got no idea, Jen. Is that the final order that you're talking about?
Yeah, it's over. Court finished in February. Final order's made.
Okay.
He never asked for PR. He never asked for anything.
So that's the final order. So if he wants anything in addition to that and you're not in agreement, yes, he'll have to go back to court.
Okay. Yeah. It states something about anything if... It should resort back to that court order if anything is to go wrong.
Yes.
Resort back to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And anything
that's
outside
right.
of that court order, Jen, is at your discretion.
Yeah, he's just under the impression that he's going to get overnight straight away.
Oh, well, he's got the final order, so the final order is what he'll be guided by. That's that.
Yeah, that's fine then. I just don't know the limits of... whether I could say no or not.
Oh, I see. Absolutely. Yeah, you can say no if it comes outside of those, if that order, the boundary in the order.
That's fine, then.
All right.
That's perfect. Thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Jen. Bye.
Thank you, Jen.
Just to let you guys know that I regularly have a team of helpers that assist me when I do these sessions, and I genuinely couldn't do it without them. So just want to let everyone know who's on this evening. I've already seen Karen and I've already seen Anne. So Karen always helps me out with the passport questions. She's my resident passport expert. So if you've got any questions at all about passport, start your question on the TikTok with HMPO and Karen will help you out. And then Anne is always around to help us each Tuesdays and Thursdays for any child maintenance questions, which are really popular. A lot of people think that family lawyers get involved in the child maintenance, and we really don't. So Anne's also on the TikTok, and if you start your question with CMS, she will help. I forgot then, Anne, sorry. With CMS, she will help you out with the CMS questions. Right, Love Spud, you are up next. So I've just sent you an invitation. There we go. How can I help?
Hi, sorry, it's Darren, actually. That's Darren. Just a Discord name. Sure. Right, so I'm currently going through a divorce. We're at the final sort of stage, probably about 8 weeks till completion.
Yeah.
Naturally, we're looking at the financial settlement.
Yes.
Now, my soon-to-be ex-wife has informed me that a judge is not likely to sign off on anything unless we've gone through mediation.
Not true. I'd like... But keep going. Not true. I'll come back to that. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've put forward a proposal for her, which roughly is about 50% of all our assets. Yeah. So as a starting point, but I've not received anything back. I've not received any counter offers.
Okay.
So my question would be: do I need to go through mediation in order to get a final order completed? Obviously, I've got to go through solicitors to get it all signed off with. I understand that.
Yeah.
But do I need mediation? And also, is it right that she said that her solicitors have informed her that no judge will sign it off unless it's gone through mediation?
No. Okay, so let's be very clear. When we're talking about a financial order, Darren, we can get them in one of two ways. We can either do them by consent, in which case you and her have agreed, or the solicitor's letters backwards and forwards have helped you guys reach an agreement. The solicitors will then draft the order and that's sent into court. You don't need to attend mediation in that instance. And we call that a financial order by consent. No court application's been made, no mediation is needed. If you guys cannot agree how the finances are to be divided, then the only option is to make a court application. And what the courts say is, if you can attempt mediation before making the application to the court, we'd be really grateful. You can't force people to do mediation because it's a voluntary process, it's not compulsory. And the logic behind the court's request is, if even two people or two applications are saved because they've managed to remedy at mediation, it takes the pressure off the court. But lots of times you haven't got time to make a mediation referral, or perhaps one of you are living outside of the UK, or perhaps there's been domestic violence. So when you look at that financial application, there's lots of exemptions to mediation. So it will depend where you sit. If you haven't made the financial application yet, then by all means make a mediation referral if you think it will work. If you have made the financial application, well, the court's already processed it, so you don't need to go to mediation. Does that?
Yeah, we're at the stage where we. Yeah, I've literally said, "Do you accept this?" I've not had anything back, and she straight away said, "I've gone forward for mediation." It's like we've not even had a discussion about it.
Right. I mean, wherever she's getting her advice from, or, you know, people are whispering in her ear, it's not helpful. I mean, you know, clearly she doesn't want to deal with you directly. So I would suggest, OK, go to mediation then. Maybe she feels more comfortable sitting round a table with a mediator. It's certainly cheaper because the mediator's fee is divided between you both. So say it's £150 for a session, which is about an hour and a half. You'll both pay 75 quid each. Whereas when you're seeing solicitors, you're both paying your own costs. You know what I mean? So if she wants to do mediation, then do it.
I'm not adverse to mediation. I'm just seeing it. You know, she's telling me it's essential.
No, and
I'm like,
not.
I don't know if it is or not.
No, it's not.
Okay, that's lovely. Thank you very much.
It's compulsory. It's voluntary. It's not compulsory. All right.
That's good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, bye. Good evening, Captain. How are you?
I'm stressed, Tracy. Oh, it's been a hell of a week. How are you?
I'm good. Well, you're almost there, and then you've got your long weekend, and now you're going to tell me that you're working this weekend.
I'm not.
Oh, good. So there we go.
Do have a long weekend.
Excellent.
I've got a couple of questions from Tuesday to kickstart tonight, yes. If that's okay.
Sure, carry on.
So this one says, the mum has taken dad to court after a month she did a false allegation. As she said, child wanted to live with his dad.
Yeah.
The mum didn't like it and dad is on bail until the end of the investigation and court is just before. Is there anything he can do as the child isn't in the best hands at his mum's? Is there anything we can do to stop hearing until after bail as he's not allowed to near the mum?
Well, you can, yeah, they can write a letter into the court explaining the situation and ask that the hearing be adjourned. It's obviously at the court's discretion, but if he's not allowed to be anywhere near mum, an option that is available to the court is to allow the hearing to go ahead and have one of them attend via Teams. But they need to be communicating that to the court and inviting the court to make a decision as to what the court want to do.
Yeah, that's great, Tracy. Thanks. This is from a dad. If I've not seen my children for 5 years due to mother withholding contact, will the court be against me having contact? I also would not want any contact with the mother due to previous history. Could this work?
So no, the court's always pushing for the children to have a relationship with both parents. You know, even in difficult times, I've seen parents that are addicts or parents that have had some mental health issues, and the court's always pushing for the children to have some time with both parents. Obviously, you know, different circumstances require different safeguarding. So it doesn't matter how long it's been. You know, if mum isn't allowing contact, then he needs to make the application. Now, it may be because there's a huge gap since he's last seen them, that it starts in bite-sized chunks. So it might be that it starts with letter writing, building up to FaceTime, building up to an hour or two on a Saturday morning, building up to all day. Do you know what I mean? It might not go straight from nothing for 5 years to, you know, alternate weekends. Depends on how old the children are. But he certainly should make the application. And unless the safeguarding concerns, the court will encourage it.
Because you might have said it, but I'd dropped out. The law's really clear when it comes to children seeing their parents, isn't it, Tracy?
Absolutely. It's very clear in that it's the children's right to have a relationship with both parents. So where you have one parent that stops the children from seeing the other parent, that is depriving the children of their rights.
Yeah. Another quick question, Tracy. Could you explain what a C8 form is?
A C8 form is a form that we fill out where we want our address to remain confidential. So if you don't want the other side to know of your address, then fill out a C8 form and send it into court. They will then log it on the system and nobody will know your address.
Okay, that's all I've got for now, Trace.
Brilliant. Thank you, Dan. Right, next up is Dilawar. So whenever you're ready, what's your question?
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, how can I help?
Okay. Hi. I just wanted to ask you, what is part 25 in family law procedures?
So
part 25.
So are you talking about finances?
No.
What
I'm talking about, actually, I'm in the court. It's been 2 years now.
Yeah.
And Kafka's got involved and the judge put the guardian under section 16.4.
Yeah.
So guardian is there. So they gave me first Section 7 abundant report. They said you have to send him letters. Then slowly, slowly, you're going to the supervised, then supported, and then you can keep him with you like every Sunday. But nothing has happened. Six supervised session happened in the contact center.
Yeah.
But all the contact has been frustrated from the mom.
Okay.
So we went back to the court and judge said, okay, you know what? We're going to involve the guardian now.
Yeah.
So the guardian said you have to do pre-supervised session in a Kafka's building. Yeah. I agreed with that. I said, okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
The first session happened on 24th of April. My son came to see me in the Kafka's building.
Yeah.
He said, I don't want to see my dad. They said, okay, your dad got gifts for you. Come inside. He said, no. So what he did, he got angry and he started smashing the things up in the Kafka's office.
Yeah.
And after that, second section happened on 24th April. Kafka said, we're going to try next time. I said, okay, go on. 24th of April, he came back again. He took my gifts but again. He talked to me. I said to him, I got a gun for you. He gave a smile to the Kafkas. Kafka said, I can see a cheeky smile on your face. Come on, your dad is waiting inside. He said, no, no, no. And then he starts smashing the things up again.
Yeah.
And the Kafkas, this child is not safe for the building. Mom, can you take him back, please?
Yeah.
But the same child, when I met him inside the school with the head teacher, he was absolutely fine with me. So I'm asking you, I already did C2 application with the part 25.
Yeah. So
this is called child psychologist something?
Yeah, so effectively it's where we can file expert evidence. So what's your question of me, sir? I'm not understanding what the question is.
So my question is, I did this application.
Yeah.
Mom's keep doing it. What do you want me to do at this stage? I don't know what to do.
Well, I think what can you do in terms of the court? Because mom keeps breaching the order. I mean, because the guardian is involved, the guardian is going to make recommendations to the judge. So the guardian is going to be able to see if mom is deliberately frustrating contact. So the guardian has been asked to obviously do a report and will make recommendations. Now, hopefully the guardian's going to support your view that it's down to mum and that mum's frustrating contact. I'm not sure where the expert evidence comes in. Well, what expert are you asking for? Or is the court asking for? A child psychologist?
Court is not asking for anything. I did C2 application because I wanted to know what is happening with my son, why he's so conflicted. So someone told me you need to do part 25 and get the involved expert. It's called child psychologist.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. So and if the court has given you permission to file expert evidence from a child psychologist, then great. You would hope that with the guardian and the child expert that we would be able or you would be able to let the court know that mum is frustrating contact. But I think you've exhausted everything that you can do. I mean, once a guardian gets involved, it's pretty serious. You know, that's sort of one step higher than CAFCAS, because for those of you that are listening, CAFCAS will come in and just do a report. They don't do anything more than that. The guardian is actually the child's solicitor. It's the child's voice piece. So there'll be two people involved. There'll be a social worker who's sort of on the ground, visiting mom, visiting dad, etc., observing the child, and then reporting back to the child's solicitor. And that's the guardian that we refer to in court. So it's pretty serious when the guardian's appointed. So the court are listening to you, I would suspect. Absolutely.
Yeah, but the guardian involved, but at the last session, the guardian said, this son is not safe for this building. Mom, can you take him out from the building?
Right.
And the guardian also said to me, your son is not distressed with you as well.
Okay, that's good then.
Yeah, that's what she said.
That's good. So perhaps just an alternative venue, you know? And as you say, the child psychologist report hopefully will help. But it sounds to me all positive so far.
Okay. Sorry, last question.
Yeah.
Because I know there's too many people in the queue as well.
That's all right.
What I did ask for the interim contact at the C2 application to let me see my son in the school. Is this going to happen? Is the judge going to allow this?
I've got no idea. I don't know enough about your case to be able to answer that. I'm really sorry. I would hope so, but I really don't know what's gone before, what statements have been submitted, what concerns the court may have. So I don't know is my honest answer to that question.
Well, the last thing judge said to the mom, if you carry on doing this, I am unimpressed with your behavior and I'm thinking to change the residency of the son to the father.
That's great. That's great. So clearly court is believing you. So, you know, that said, maybe your application will be successful. But I think
That's what I did. C2 application with part 25, and also I invite the court to give me a suspended residency or a full custody with the guardian help, whatever I did mention in the court order anyway.
Right. Okay, fabulous. Well, good
so
luck.
So is that going to help?
Absolutely. Everything you've told me is all positive and it's all going in the right direction. Come back and let us know how you got on.
Okay, that's right. Fine. Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks, Dilawar. Bye.
Bye-bye.
I'm so pleased when dads come on and share their stories. And Dilawar there has a particularly difficult story because he really is up against it. But it's so encouraging because I get so many dads listening to the Legal Queen channel and asking questions. And it's nearly always about they're struggling to have contact with their children. So really appreciate that, Dilawar, if you're still in the audience. Thank you so much for sharing that. Captain, you're on again. How can I help?
Hi. Hi, Legal Queen. Could you please tell me what I need to focus on when writing my position statement for my upcoming final hearing? It's a children's one.
So you want to keep the position statement to the point. Don't waffle. You know, don't think that the court's going to want to know chapter and verse about the background and the situation. You know, I get emails sometimes and they can be pages long because people think that all the history, well, you know, we met in this year and we moved in together in this year and then we had a child and then we had a row and then we had this. Court doesn't need to know any of that. You want to state, this is the application that's before the court. If you're the applicant, then you would follow on by saying, this is why I think my application should succeed, because it's in the best interest of the children. If you're the respondent, you would say, this is why I disagree with the application, because the application's asking for X, Y, and Z, and I don't agree with X, Y, and Z. Keep it short and to the point, no more than sort of 2 to 3 pages in length, line and a half spacing. Be very clear about what your position is. This is my position. This is where I feel the court should make the order. You know, alternate weekends, half the holidays, whatever it might be. And this is why. This is why my position is in the best interest of the children. That's key. That's really key.
Great. And just following on from the last caller we had, Tracy.
Yeah.
I know you'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the charity Both Parents Matter.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thank you for that, Captain. So, yeah, just following on from Dilawar's question. And again, thank you so much, Dilawar, for coming on and sharing that. There is a charity that focuses on fathers who are in Dilawar's position and many other dads' permission called, position called Both Parents Matter. You know, there is a myth out there, and I say that because it genuinely is a myth that the courts favour the mothers. They genuinely don't favour the mothers, they favour the children. It's circumstance a lot of times is why the children get to stay with mum, but I won't go into that now. But yes, thank you, Captain. Both Parents Matter. Check out that charity. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And going back to the myth that you just mentioned, there's a really good video on the Tea with the Queen about that myth, isn't there, with Amy?
Yeah, absolutely. Me and Amy go into some discussion about that and how the courts are somewhat constrained by the law and why it makes the child arrangements orders that it does simply because of the status quo. You know, if the children are always living with the mum, mum's been the main carer, and then the parents separate, it can be really hard sometimes for dad to get contact. And sadly, it doesn't take a lot to raise concern with the court. You know, so if one parent raises some allegations about domestic violence, etc., it doesn't take a lot for the court to go, okay, let's check all that out. And in the meantime, we're going to stop anybody having contact, which is such a shame. But it happens, unfortunately.
I've got another one, if that's all right, Trace.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So my ex moved out over a year ago. We are both on the title deeds and mortgage. The house is now sold, STC,
yeah.
And conveyancing well underway. He currently rents a home and has a new partner.
Yeah.
However, his solicitor has sent my solicitor a letter this week advising he is going to seek returning to the family home until the sale completes. I live in the family home with our daughter, and the thought of him returning makes me feel ill.
Yeah.
It would be completely detestable. Our daughter and create a toxic environment that I would not want to be subject to me or her.
Yeah.
Domestic abuse in the form of mental abuse.
Yeah.
I am on the edge of the thought of him returning. What can I do, if anything?
Well, my first question is, how long has he been gone? Because if he's been gone for sort of more than 2 to 3 months, you can actually change the locks. Okay, even if he's named on the property. So I've done a few videos on this in the past. Where a person is named on the property, but they've already moved out and they've been gone for 2 to 3 months, the courts then happy to accept that they have alternative housing. So if you change the locks and don't let them in, they're not going to be homeless and on the street, okay? If you've only been gone a couple of days, then probably not, you couldn't do it. But by the sounds of it, there's good grounds there to prevent from coming in. And a lot of times as well, let you guys into a secret, a lot of times as solicitors, we are writing letters to the other side to try to persuade them to see our point of view. So there may be something else that his solicitor is looking for, a signed order, a signed form, getting her to agree something else and putting a little bit of pressure on her to say, you know, if we can't wrap this up, he's going to have to move back to the house. I'm not so sure that he will move back to the house, but it might be, you know, a sort of a distraction because they're trying to put pressure on her to do something else.
Yeah, and just on that, Tracy, with solicitors' letters that people may receive, you know, if they are representing themselves,
yeah,
they're not legally binding, and sometimes they can be forceful and scary, can't they?
Absolutely. You know, I've got colleagues that, you know, there's a litigant in person on the other side, and they don't care. They will write to that litigant in person as if they're a solicitor. They really don't care. So they will be very forceful, very intimidating. They will say things that, you know, sort of stretch the truth at times. But no, a solicitor's letter isn't legally binding. Not at all. If a solicitor says to you, and you have 14 days to reply, well, if you can't do it in 14 days, just let them know. Well, I'll do my best, but I might need 21 or 28. There isn't anything really the solicitor can do. Sometimes solicitors threaten to make an application. Well, you know, do your best, but at the end of the day, if you need time or you're trying to raise funds or you're trying to gather the information from, you know, free services like this one, you might need a bit longer than 14 days. The golden rule is never be intimidated. Never be intimidated by the solicitors. Never be intimidated by the court. Okay, know your position. Get some legal advice. Move forward with confidence because, you know, everybody has a right to be heard. One of the reasons I started this social media channel was for that reason. Everyone has a right to be heard, regardless of the situation.
Yeah, that's great. My child's dad is verbally aggressive upon handover.
Yeah.
I stopped contact and he's not agreeing to contact in a CC contact centre.
Yeah.
He's harassed third parties. Are there any further suggestions from you? Baby is 10 months. He lives 90 miles away and works Monday to Friday, 9 to 5.
What was the first bit? He's not in agreement to a contact centre, was it?
My child's dad's verbally aggressive upon handover.
Yeah.
So she stopped contact.
Right.
He isn't agreeing to contact in a contact centre.
Oh, wow. That she doesn't need to do anything. She doesn't need to do anything. If she, and quite rightly so, doesn't want to be a victim to that verbal abuse on the doorstep, then she stopped that, quite rightly. It's now up to dad. You know, if he's not agreeable to mum's suggestions, then mum just continues to stop the contact. The baby's so young. I mean, 10 months old is very young. And of course, dad's remedy is to make a court application. So nothing more that mum can do there. She's, you know, so far, she's done the right thing. She's protected the child.
Yeah. All right, that's it for now, Trace.
Lovely. Okay, thanks, Captain. Ansi, you are up again. There we go. I've sent you an invitation whenever you're ready. You're on mute. There we go. How can I help?
I just read this this order, which you said, and it says the applicant is to serve the police disclosures, which I'm not surprised they haven't done it. They received it a month and a half ago.
Okay.
So is it like, is it just I email, you know, the applicant solicitor to ask for the documents or...
How do you know they've got them?
What, sorry?
How do you know they've got the documents, the Annex 5?
Because I... Because obviously nothing in this case is going, you know, smoothly. So I keep, you know, emailing the disclosure team. I email these two different policies. So they always, you know, kept informing me and they said, oh, we sent it today to the court. So that means they should have got it already because I should have, like my statement was due out. I think it was beginning of May.
So police,
we should all.
Did the police say they'd sent it to the court?
I think they sent it to the court. Yeah.
So that's what was my question. How do you know the applicants got it?
Well, because they should forward it to them, well, because it says never, in the order yeah, that...
So never assume. So what you want to be doing is writing to the applicant solicitor to say, have you received the police disclosure? I contacted the police unit on this date. They confirmed that they'd sent it to the court on this date. Have you received it? If so, you refer to paragraph 4 of the order or whatever it is. You've got to file it on me. But don't assume, because sometimes mistakes are made like that. You know, if the police have filed it with the court, well, my God, it could be forever before the parties get it, because the court's just so busy. You might never get it. You might, it literally might be given to you on the day of court.
Yeah, I'm thinking that it's going to be just in the bundle. I'd never see it before I go to court. I have that, you know, thoughts, because I know everyone is behind. And is it costing any money, you know, these disclosures?
I don't know what you mean, Ansi. Cost any money?
Because they said it's in the court order. If you know, if there is a charge for these disclosures, then we are to pay equally, so share between us.
There we go. So if there are charges, they'll be shared between you. I'm sure if there are charges, the police will send you out an invoice. I don't know if there is an invoice. You'll have to check with the police. All right.
Okay.
Lovely. Thanks, then. Bye.
Thank you.
Jamie, you are up again. Oh, no, this is the first time. Sorry, Jamie, I couldn't hear you before, did I? Hello, I can hear you now.
Yeah, sorry, can you hear me now?
I can, yeah. How can I help?
Yeah, so I'm just trying to support my wife with a process that we're trying to follow. Yes. So what we're looking to do is to remove her ex-partner from having parental responsibility, add myself, and change her children's surname to mine. Okay. So there's obviously a lot going on there. And I believe, first of all, is it a C1 form that we would have to complete if we were looking to do that?
Yes. But you may not succeed, Jamie, in removing the biological dad's parental responsibility. More than two people can have PR. Let me just say that.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean that you can't have PR. You can. But you're going. It's a rather hard test to remove a father's PR.
Well, we looked at some of the guidance that was out there, and it does seem to suggest that it's in really extreme circumstances. And that was sort of my second question was, if you believe the situation as it stands, just giving the general idea, would be extreme enough. So he is currently on bail awaiting his day in court for crimes against children, violence and drug dealing. Yes. So... obviously, he's not been found guilty yet, but there is other children that he's involved with. Yeah. I believe that can be referenced in that court process that we would go through. But until he's found guilty, do you think there's any likelihood of that succeeding?
No. The violence and the drugs, even if he's found guilty for that, that's still not exceptional enough. Yeah. It will always be, or nearly always be, crimes against children. So if he hasn't been found guilty, then I suspect you won't succeed and you may want to wait until the criminal matters are over. But in the interim, Jamie, you can still apply for your PR and you can still apply to have the child's name changed.
I think because they have no contact with him whatsoever and he in over 3 years now, we thought there'd be some success in that part of it. But it was the removal of the PR that I wasn't sure if there was enough evidence and concrete stuff to work with to actually have the success with that part of it. Yeah. But can that be added later on?
Yes.
If he was found guilty later on, could you go through...
Absolutely. You can return the matter to court and then ask that the court consider that then. Your PR, because you are now officially the child's stepfather because you've married mom, won't be an issue. I guarantee that it won't be an issue at all. Changing the name may still be an issue, though, even though they haven't seen dad for 3 years. So, you know, do some research on the test or the burden of proof that you kind of have to look at when changing a child's name. Because it's not in the bag. It's definitely not in the bag.
No, I think we were thinking that if obviously he was found guilty, it would probably make the whole process a lot simpler, but we weren't sure if that, because that's all active at the moment, whether that would be taken into consideration until he's actually guilty.
You're absolutely right, Jamie. You know, if he's found guilty, obviously the children's charges are going to give you a much stronger case. Absolutely.
Okay. No, that's brilliant. Thank you. And sorry about the issues earlier with the sound.
Oh, no, it's fine. Thanks for coming back. Cheers, Jamie. Bye.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
Lane, I'm going to come to you next whenever you're ready. I've sent you an invitation. There we go. How can I help?
Hiya, can you hear me?
I can.
Hiya. I've just got a quick question. Yeah. I'm a first-time mum, so this is all a bit new to me.
Yeah.
I've got a nearly two-year-old, and myself and her dad separated just before her first birthday in August.
Yeah.
I recently moved on and got with somebody. However, I ended that as I just wasn't ready for a new relationship. He, however, did get with somebody. And in the beginning, everything was sort of fine and it was all amicable. And recently, this new girlfriend has caused so many dramas with him seeing his daughter and with me having any sort of contact with her father. She's got this sort of vendetta against me with no sort of explanation. Recently, she's thrown so much abuse at me via text, via phone, which she is now blocked. She has also got a daughter, but does not have her full time. And from what I've heard, there's been some sort of problems there. I do not trust this girl one bit, and I really, really don't want her around my daughter because I think she's the type of person to sort of poison my daughter. I've spoke to her dad about this numerous of times and he's just not agreeing with me with anything. Is there anything I can do to prevent my daughter from having any contact with this new girlfriend?
Not really. If there are serious welfare concerns, Lane, so, you know, if your daughter is at risk, physically at risk, then potentially you can. But the court's starting point is that if dad has parental responsibility, when the child is in his care, he can make decisions about who that child spends time with, okay? And the other thing I wanted to say to you, you're a first-time mum, and I appreciate that. You said in part of your question to me, I'm worried that she would poison my daughter's mind against me. Don't ever give her that sort of power. Don't ever. You are her mum. You know, you are her mum. She's spending 95% of the time with you. You know, that lady's never going to be able to poison your daughter's mind against you, not at the age of two. So please don't let that impact your decision making. If you feel that your daughter's going to be at risk when she's with her, then yes, you can do something about it. But if it's an instinct or a feeling, which I'm not saying is wrong, but sadly the court can't go on that. So you'd almost have to release child to dad and just hope that, you know, the child's okay.
Okay, and just one more other thing.
Yeah,
and
sure.
Because this new girlfriend also has a daughter, there's some sort of concerns from my daughter's dad's side of the family about why she doesn't have sort of full custody with her daughter and lives with her daughter's dad. Do I have the right to ask why?
Oh, well, not really. Again, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you're not in court proceedings with her, but now you're starting to shine a little bit of a different light on this. So I would be sort of saying to dad, look, what's the go there? You know, I need to be aware. If she's been involved in court proceedings before that have involved children and the children aren't living with her, I really need reassurance that everything's going to be okay. Doesn't mean that you can demand to know anything about it, but until such times as you get that reassurance, you may be kind of limiting the amount of exposure your daughter has with her. So that kind
that's
of
exactly
shines
that,
a different
yes.
light on it. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, not knowing of why her daughter's not with her full time that was concerning me.
Yeah.
And
I mean, look, it may be something and nothing. We don't want to cast aspersions, but I totally get as a mum that you're just going to want to know. You're going to want to be reassured.
Yes, definitely. No, thank you. Thank you so much for your answers.
Pleasure. All right. Good luck, Lane. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Captain, I can see you're off mute. How can I help?
Two questions for you, Tracy.
Yep.
What's the difference between a For Me and a D821?
For Me is where we are in proceedings, so we're in litigation, we're talking about a financial application, and we both parties have to complete a For Me. 26 pages in length, and it wants to know all about your assets and your liabilities and where you live and everything else, your pay slips, your pension, everything. And then you swap them with the other side. And they do the same. D81 is an overview. So you fill out the D81 and you're giving the judge just top level information. This is what I earn. This is the value of my pension. These are my savings. This is my debt. It's those four figures. And you send that into court with your agreed financial order. And the purpose of the D81 is so that the court can look at the order. And of course, the test is this order that I'm being asked to make fair and reasonable? So the only way the judge is going to know that is if he looks at the D81, because then he can see, right, what do the parties earn? What have they got in the bank? What's their level of debt? If I make this order, is it fair and reasonable? So it's a very different form to the For Me.
Yeah. So my partner's not named on his child's birth certificate.
Yeah.
He's going for a child arrangement order. Is he likely to get access? They were married for 13 years.
Yeah. Partner's going for, well, yeah, because we're going to be looking at what's in the best interest of the child. So unless we've got any safeguarding concerns, court's always going to be promoting that the child have contact with both parents. So based on that question, the information in that question, the answer would be yes, I'm sure he will. But of course, there may be so much more that we don't know about.
That's true. And just following on from that, Tracy, if you have got... say mum's not put dad on the birth certificate or dad's not put mum on birth certificate.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean you can't apply for a child arrangement if you are the biological father.
I actually put a video out on this last week and it done really well. I think it's almost at 1 million views. And it was about that. The question was, you know, what to do if you're a father and you're not named on your child's birth certificate. You still apply to the court for parental responsibility. You still apply to the court for a child arrangements order. Just because you're not on the birth certificate, dads, don't think that you don't have any rights to see your children. People will tell you all sorts of things. I even in that video go on to explain that a lot of times mum's defence will be, I didn't put him on the birth certificate because he's not the biological dad. So in the video, I then say, if mum raises that defence, say to the court, while we're here, judge, let's get some DNA testing then. And the court will order that mum provide a DNA sample of the child so that we can clear that up straight away.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Tracy.
Brilliant. Thanks, Captain. Jules, I'm going to come to you next. You've been waiting patiently. How can I help?
Hi, can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
In a family court, I know what a first hearing is and I know what a fact-finding hearing is. Mm-hmm. What is a gatekeeping hearing?
So you don't really have a hearing for gatekeeping. What happens is the volume of applications that are being sent into the court, sometimes we can't just, or the court can't automatically assign a hearing. So you might get a legal advisor looking at some applications to literally check them over and see how serious they are, see if actually they can be dealt with by some other remedy other than a court hearing. So it's just keeping an eye on the applications that are coming through the gate, essentially. Do you know what I mean? Can some just go straight off to CAFCAS? Do some have to have a hearing? Can some be remedied by maybe the parties attending mediation because it's not that serious? It's just another way that the court are trying to get to see as many people as they can by filtering through those that aren't particularly urgent.
Okay, yeah, because obviously you filled out the C100 and we've got a date for the first hearing.
Yeah.
But when I spoke to the ex, he said, like, it's a gatekeeping hearing. And I'd never heard of that before. So, I did Google it, but I didn't think that was worth worrying about.
So if you've got a hearing, let's say the gatekeeping is on the 10th of July, you don't have to attend on that day. That's when the legal advisor is going to look at the application and then give you a decision.
Yeah, we've got a first hearing coming up in 2 weeks.
Okay. Okay.
And also, next question. I got a CAS calling in a couple of days, and just like, what kind of questions do they ask? I have looked on their website, but unless you know someone that's gone through it, you don't really know, do you?
Depends what the court have asked CAFCAS to do. What have they asked CAFCAS to do?
I don't know. I just got my welcome pack and an email to say that we are calling you for your interview over the telephone on this date and this time.
So if it's the first time you've had any dealings with CAFCAS, it'll just be a safeguarding letter. So they're just going to speak to you and say, OK, application's been made to the court. You as the mother, what are your objections? What are your concerns, if any? What is it is that you what is it that you're asking the court for? And they'll just sort of try to gather some information, really. And then they'll do the same thing to dad. They'll then run both your names and the child's name or the children's name through the social services system and also the police records to make sure that the child isn't known to social services and the family aren't known to police.
As far as I know, I've never been involved in social services or the police or anything like that. Far as I know, there's no safeguarding or welfare issues.
Yeah. And then they'll put that together in what we call a safeguarding letter and send it in to the judge and say, right, we've had a quick chat with mum and dad. They won't make any recommendations at this stage. They're just going to summarise it for the court, really.
Oh, when do they make their recommendations?
That will be following a Section 7 report, if one's ordered.
Is that after the first hearing?
It may not happen at all, Jules. I don't know. But yeah, usually Section 7s are ordered at the first hearing. But don't assume that your case will need one. They're not always ordered.
Like, speak to dad, and then they send their recommendations to court for the first hearing.
Depends what they're... See, I'm not sure that you know what they've been asked to do, so I don't know what they've been asked to do.
No, I don't.
Yeah.
It's just the welcome pack.
Yeah.
And then they say, just like, I looked on their website and I've just got my interview and I'm thinking, I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I think it's the safeguarding letter. Because if you haven't been to court yet, you haven't received an order directing them to do a Section 7. So they won't just do one off the bat. So it's just your safeguarding letter, which will be a very short interview.
Okay, all right then.
All right?
Yeah, okay. Fine. Yeah,
thanks, Jules.
I haven't got a solicitor, so I don't really know
That's fine. Yeah. You can come back here as many times as you need to. Happy to help.
Okay, well, because that said on the letter, they'll be there on the first hearing.
Yeah.
So they'll be there. Because on the first hearing, obviously, I stand up to the judge and say what I want. Dad stands up and say what he wants. Basically, what we say to CAS.
Yeah.
And is that when they make their recommendations?
No. If the court need further information because they're struggling to identify what's in the best interest of the child, they will order CAS to do a Section 7. It'll come
down. And that's the only time they do their recommendations after that section's done?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Oh, okay. I think I get it now. So on the first hearing, we go to court.
Yeah.
And if the judge feels like there's more to the story than me and my ex, they'll get CAS to do their recommendations after the first hearing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I think I get it.
Good luck, Jules. Thank you so much for coming on. Appreciate that. Bye.
Thank you, bye.
Okay. I absolutely love it when people come on like that, because this is exactly the reason that I started the social media channels. You know, it was to help people that didn't have solicitors, that were completely, you know, lost in the system. And I'm sure Jules is one of thousands of people out there that I hope are maybe listening and get some information. Mart, how can I help? Good evening, first of all. It's your first question this evening.
Good evening, Trish.
Hello, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Good.
Right. First one is, and I think it's a bit of a fun one for you.
Okay.
Question from a law student.
Yes.
How did you know that family law was for you?
I didn't. And I don't think that you do as a solicitor. The area of specialism finds you. So when I first started out, I was a barrister at first, not a solicitor. As a baby barrister, I was in crime. And I was just given, I would take any brief that the senior barristers would give me. And then one day, one of the family barristers that was in my chambers was ill. And I got thrown a family brief. And from there on, I just started to do more and more family. So it found me, really. I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do when I came out of university and qualified. I just knew I wanted to do the law.
Ah, happy days. Yeah. Fun fact about Tracy. Yeah. Right. What age do social services stop being involved with a child, and when can the child make a decision when they want to look for an absent parent?
So if the child is within the care system, I'm pretty sure that social services are responsible until they're 18. I could be wrong. Child arrangements orders, I know, only go up as far as 16. But I'm pretty sure that a child can look for its parents unless social services have motivation to keep that information from the child. They can ask for help to look for their parents at any time.
Huh. The next one is, would a father who has previously self-harmed in front of the children be allowed contact through the court?
Yes, absolutely. As long as we can show that dad is better, making progress, realises that that wasn't appropriate behaviour, as long as the children are over any kind of impact that that may have had on watching dad do that, then yes. You know, we never draw a line under, you know, fathers or mothers ever seeing children again. You know, people can work towards rectifying and remedying bad behaviours.
Yeah. My ex is making an application for sole residency and wanting me to have Saturday supervised visits with my daughter.
Yeah.
We already have a 50-50 order and his grounds are fake. I'm a litigant in person and a bit stressed as his parents are wealthy, throwing all the cash at this. Not sure what the question is, just likely how the court to give him what he wants in a 1-hour hearing. It was literally my hearing as I asked the court to tidy up small issue on the son's order, but he's come at me with this. So we have spent 2 years in court already. Went all the way to the full trial, had an order for 1 year, which both have breached, and it doesn't work for us. The next hearing is next week.
So I think essentially the question in there, Mark, was if dad makes an application for residence, will he succeed? Difficult to answer, because what I'm going to say is if it goes against the status quo, no. If you're a parent looking to change residency, you've got to have real good grounds to do it. And you've usually got to have the backing of social services and CAFCAS, and generally a guardian will be involved. You don't just rock up to court and say, right, I want the child to come and live with me now, because that is not in the child's best interest. As much as the parents might hate each other, the court's always going to be focused on what's in the best interest of the child. So what I would say to that mother is they are incredibly difficult applications to succeed on, really difficult applications to succeed on. She shouldn't be intimidated. Money in the family law system doesn't really matter. We have so many litigants in person. You know, I have litigants in person coming up against King's Counsel. It doesn't matter in the family court. It doesn't work like that. It's not like commercial law where, you know, money can probably talk. It's not like that in family. So she shouldn't be intimidated by that at all. The actual process, I get why that might intimidate her. But the judge is there to listen to what's in the best interest of the child, not to judge the parents or criticise them or anything like that, but to just make a decision what's in the child's best interests.
Brilliant. And the last one I got for you is, if CAFCAS say they don't think they need to be involved after the safeguarding interview, they've said that's what they'll say to the court, but not sure if it can change. Also, what should we prepare for the first hearing for child court?
There's nothing really to prepare for your first hearing. You're either the applicant or you're the respondent. Go to court knowing your position. Go to court being able to summarise that position succinctly for the court and not be waffling on. Let the court know exactly what it is, the order that you're looking for. But the court can't make any orders at the first appointment unless you both agree. So if you're not in agreement at that first hearing, all the court can do is make directions. And what I mean by that is they might direct that CAFCAS do a Section 7. They might direct that the parties attend a separated parents programme. They might direct that there's some drug testing taking place if we've got drugs involved. So all they can do is make directions. They can't make an order unless you're both in agreement. The only time the judge can make an order without the parents' agreement is at the final hearing, but not the first hearing.
On the way on, brilliant. Thank you very much, Trace. That's all I got for you.
Appreciate that. Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Cheers, Trace. Bye.
Can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay. Basically, my situation is I split up with my ex-partner about 3 or 4 months ago.
Yeah.
I was seeing my children and everything was fine. And it was all good. I've had such a strong bond with them. I've got 2 girls, 1's 7, 1's 2.
Yeah.
She recently got with a new partner last week, and that sort of threw me into a bit of a mental breakdown. I've had anxiety attacks, panic attacks within all the week. I'm putting myself together because I know I'm strong and I can do it.
Good.
Because I want to see my girls.
Yeah.
I was supposed to see my girls last night, but she has stated that my eldest daughter, who's 7, doesn't want to see me. So I spoke to my friend, I spoke to my mum. They said, don't go around there. Just let her do what she's doing. And I believe she's alienating my eldest to go against me, because I spoke to her on FaceTime whilst they're in bed. And I said to my eldest, I'll take you out next Friday and we'll do whatever you want. And she said to her, do you want to go out with daddy? And then, don't forget, mummy's not going to be there. And then she changed her mind. And I've recently just called him up at 5:30. My eldest didn't want to talk to me. She was shouting, saying, I don't want to speak to daddy. My ex went, oh, she doesn't want to speak to you. So I said, oh, can I speak to my other daughter? And it was 2. She didn't really pay any attention to me because Liliana, my other daughter, was in the garden, so she was more interested in what she was doing. And I said, okay, well, let's talk about this weekend, about my weekend, when I'm supposed to actually see them, because this hasn't gone through court or anything.
Yeah.
She's basically said that she don't want to see my eldest doesn't want to see me. I said, okay, my mum and my friend both said to me, if your eldest doesn't want to come with you, then just go to the house, take my youngest, obviously not just take her, but take your youngest with you, because she can't stop you from doing that. But she's turned around and said to me, I'm not allowing you to take my 2-year-old out with you on her own because she's too young.
Yeah, so this Tyler boils down to co-parenting, doesn't it? Mum is just, for whatever reason, not trusting you to have the children. She's not thinking about the girls and allowing them to have a relationship with you, which is really important at any age, regardless of what age your daughters are. So what you need to be doing now is, it's no good if you're just bashing your head against a brick wall. Mum clearly thinks that she holds all the cards. She has the ability to be able to manipulate the children, which I think is some of what you were telling me. So you need to start the process. And that process is 3 steps. Obviously, step 1, what I call kitchen table discussions, that doesn't apply to you because you've been trying and that hasn't worked. Step 2, mediation referral. So, you know, you want to say to mum, look, we need to sit down and talk about this. I'm not happy with some of the decisions you're making. I don't feel that you respect the children having a relationship with me. You certainly don't respect me as their father. So mediation is step 2. And if that doesn't work, Tyler, a court application. Because the court's not going to allow mum to prevent the girls from having a relationship with you unless there are welfare concerns. And, you know, what you're telling me is there's not welfare concerns. She's saying that she can't. You know, it always amazes me that when parents split up, some mums, not all mums, but some mums will say, you can't possibly look after them because they're 2 or they're 3. But yeah, I guarantee before the relationship broke down, mum would be quite happy to go out for an evening and let you look after the children, or go out, you know, for the day.
100%.
And that's across the board. That's across the board. So it applies both ways. When you're separated, they've got to allow that contact to continue.
Yeah, 100%. I totally agree with you. Totally agree with you, because I feel like she's just ripping it away from me and ripping my heart out. And it's affecting me, but I don't want it to affect me because it affects my work.
Exactly. And it can't affect you, Tyler. You know, sometimes, and I'm not saying this is in your case, but sometimes a lot of people do this because they know the buttons to press. So, you know, really got to be resilient. You know, for the sake of the children, you've got to find that strength from somewhere. And I'm sure if you've been listening to us this evening, we speak a lot about Both Parents Matter. Check it out, seriously, because you'll be able to share your experience with other dads who are going through the same thing. And you might draw some strength from that at a time when you really need it. It could really help.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, but I think for you, next step is mediation, referral, and then court.
Yeah. So what would your advice be for this weekend then? Because when I was video recording her, I was recording my screen, but sadly, it didn't record her voice. It only recorded mine.
What you want to do is obviously attend at the property to collect the children. And if she says no, you're not having them, ask for a reason why, and then leave. Then leave. Don't cause a scene. Don't, because the minute anything happens, she's straight on the phone to the police. That could be used against you. You then leave. As sad as that is, you walk away. But at least you can then walk away and document what happened. You know, so 25th of May, called at the house. This is what she said. This is what I said. You'll be able to use that later on in a statement.
Yeah. She, apparently, it's all on that recording I made, but you can't hear her voice. Yeah. She was shouting at me in during that call a couple of hours ago. Her daughter, who's 18 years old, took the phone off her and said, "I'm taking control of this call because you're shouting at each other." I was just like, I'm not shouting, and it doesn't concern you, so pass the phone back to your mother, please. And I eventually got to speak to my daughter, and whilst I was talking to her, I said, "Look, you can come out with me on Saturday. If you want to just come out for a couple of hours, you can. And then we'll do whatever you want. And then if you want to stay with me for longer, you can. If you don't want to stay with me, then you just go home." And as I was saying that, the mother spoke up and said, "Do you want to go out with Daddy, yes or no?" So she is alienating her there and then, because I was getting through to her. Because only a week ago or whatever, I was with them and having a good time.
Yeah. It's difficult as well, isn't it? Because you're not in the room, you're on the phone. And as I'm listening to you telling me the story, I'm thinking, if I was in your shoes, I'd probably be doing less phone calls, really starting to build up the case now. So I'd be doing more emails and more text messages. Plus, by having the phone calls, indirectly, you're sort of putting the children in the middle. And I know that you don't mean to do that, Tyler, but they are in the middle. Do you know what I mean? So I would do less phone calls, get more strategic. Mediation, she might say no, in which case just go ahead and make your children's application. Bide your time. You're going to have to play the long game on this one, but you'll get your order eventually.
Yeah, so about her daughter being on the taking over the phone call, she when I said I'll turn up at 10 o'clock, her daughter turned around and said to her, "Well, she won't be here." She turned around to her mother and said, "You can go out at 10 o'clock. I'll be here, but the kids won't be here."
Okay, well, see what happens. See what happens, Tyler.
So your advice is turn up at 10 o'clock. If they're not there, just walk away.
Walk away, yeah. Don't cause a scene. Or if she answers the door and says you're not having them, ask her why and then just walk away. Don't cause a scene. Don't give her any ammunition to call the police or anything like that. Just walk away. But document it when you've gone. All right?
Okay, then.
All right. Thanks, Tyler. You know, you can come back here any time, okay?
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, then. Pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Kaylee, you've been waiting patiently. Let me take you off mute. What's your question?
Hi. So my children want to change their surname over to my surname. They haven't seen their dad in 2.5 years. but I can't, I've got no way of contacting him to get him to sign the paperwork. Can I put the paperwork to the King's Bench, or will it have to go through court for the name change to be legal for their passports?
Will you have to put the paperwork to the King? Well, if you can't get Dad's permission, you're going to have to get the court's permission to change their names.
Hello?
Can you hear me?
So do I do that? Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah. So if... But in order to get the court's permission, you're going to have to find out where Dad is. So that's another application. Okay, so you can't just make...
He's moved house.
Sorry?
He's moved house and there's no way of contacting him?
There'll be a way. There'll be a way. You're going to have to maybe do some inquiries with an inquiry agent, exhaust social media. You have to put an advert in the paper because before you can make your application to change the children's name, you've got to prove that you've tried everything in your power to try and find their dad. And you're going to have to give evidence to the court that you've tried to find their dad. So you wouldn't be able to say to the court, he's moved house and I don't know where he's gone. The court will say, well, I'm sorry, that's not good enough. You're going to have to go and exhaust other avenues. And I'm telling you those other avenues. So reach out to an inquiry agent. They can sometimes help. You can put an advert in the paper just to see if you know his whereabouts. The courts will always take that as good evidence. Exhaust social media and keep and document everything that you're doing so you can show the court what you've done.
Okay, because I've kept all the emails and everything where I've been emailing him, asking for an address and things like that, and it just bounces back and nothing comes back of it.
Okay, so that's so that's one tick in the box, but you probably need about 5 or 6 of those ticks. Try his work, try his friends, try his family, try places that you know he used to go or still goes. All right.
Right, okay.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you, Kaylee.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Captain, sorry, I know you were waiting. I just wanted to get through those two because they were both new to Discord.
No, hey, Tracy. Okay. I don't know if you want to answer this question now or do a video on it because it's been quite popular this evening.
Okay.
About EX160 form.
I'll answer it now.
So just basically what it is and how.
Yeah.
How you doing
when,
it?
When you make an application to the court, guys, no matter what application it is, they're always going to be a court fee. So, for example, if you're making an application for your divorce, it's £593. If you're making an application for a children's application, it's £232. If you're making an application for a finance, it's £275. So they're quite hefty court fees. There's only a one-off fee payable, by the way. You don't have to make any other court fee payments. But the EX160 is designed for those people who are in receipt of benefits or they're on a low income. So what you want to do is download the EX160 before you even submit your application. Fill it all out, send it into court. And if the court think that you are of the threshold, so in other words, you are on benefits or you have a low enough income, they will give you an exemption, which means that you don't have to pay the court fee. And the exemption is a number. It's a long number which starts with HWF, help with fees, and then it will be like a long number after that. Then when you make your application, there'll be a space on it that says, do you have a HWF number? And you'll fill it out. And you get that help with fees by completing the EX160. So give it a go if you're in receipt of benefits or you're on a low income.
That's it. That's all I've got for now, Tracy. Oh,
pleasure. Thank you for that, Captain. I really do appreciate your help. For those of you listening on the podcast, I really hope that you enjoyed that episode. And don't forget, guys, if you can give a 5-star review, if you think that it's worthy of one, that would really help us increase our monthly listeners and therefore help more and more people. Thanks again.